Augustine, WATY Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. President Trump says he's been watching the Senate confirmation hearings of his Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh. He says the judge has an outstanding intellect. Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office as he welcomed the Emir of Kuwait to the White House, the president said he's happy with the way the proceedings have been going. The Mexican man charged with killing an Iowa college student was known for years on the dairy farm where he worked by another name, John Budd. Yerba Farms is now facing scrutiny over whether its managers had any idea that the man, whose real name is Christian Bahena Rivera, was in the country illegally before the slaying of Molly Tibbetts. Tropical Depression Gordon piling up huge rainfall totals in parts of the South, including more than 10 inches already in the Florida Panhandle. The Southeast Regional Climate Center reports about 10.5 inches fell at Florida's Pensacola International Airport. On Wall Street right now, the Dow is down 5 points. This is SRN News.
Here downtown, there's an accident on I-95 southbound beyond H Street. Not into travel lanes, but traffic is backed up for a bit there. Also, there's a disabled vehicle on the East Beltway, 295 northbound at the exit at St. John's Bluff. And slow traffic on I-95 northbound all the way beyond Emerson to the Full Warren Bridge and the entrance to I-10. A slight chance of a shower, maybe a thunderstorm through tonight, low 74. Thursday, partly sunny, high 89.
Thank you for listening to WTRJ The Truth and the inspiring and informative programs we feature. We partner with ministries in this community, nationally, and even globally, to bring you the programs you hear. The program content is produced by these ministry partners and does not necessarily reflect the positions or views of other ministry partners, WTRJ The Truth owners, management, or employees in every instance. We trust that you're blessed by the programs you hear. And thanks for listening to WTRJ The Truth.
Welcome to the Inspiration 316 show hosted by John Beener, founder of Wise Counsel. John shares the inspiring and shocking miracles of how Jesus Christ is changing lives, families, organizations, and nations in this chaotic world. These are the true stories the media won't cover because they defy the shocking bad news they are selling. Stay tuned to be inspired.
Well, good day. It's John Beener. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Inspiration 316. We're all about the good news of Jesus Christ, the everyday miracles happening in people's lives, even when they don't know it or don't know Him, either way. I mean, God's answering prayers. I see these ads sometimes about this drug that did such and such, or somebody had a little testimony about that. Of course, they had 12 side effects, too. But the point of it all is, I'm wondering, did that actually work, or did that actually, was it the prayer of their mother or the prayer of their father? Because I know what happened to me is that my prayers of my grandmother were covering me for so many years, you know. Be thankful to see her one day, to be able to share my thankfulness to her. My mom and dad, they prayed in emergencies, but I don't recall them ever praying in a normal sense. We never prayed at dinner. But this, now, hey, the theme of today's show, sorry, I got a little off track. Theme of today's show is Seeds of Greatness. And so they were referring to, hey, we all start out as a seed. We got to be conceived in the mother's womb. And that's how God works through the world. It's through seeds. He actually does that. I wrote a book with Brig Hart, The Untold Secret That Creates True Wealth. It's all about the seeds that God plants in the parable of the sower, in the beaten down path, rocky soil, and thorny soil, and good soil. God wants us all working and operating out of good soil. So anyway, in John, back to Seeds of Greatness, John 12:24 says, "Verily I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds." That is where it grows and multiplies and grows and multiplies. Okay, we as seeds need to grow and multiply. That means have more offspring ourselves, too. That's the purpose of having a man and a woman together to be able to conceive children. Of course, Philippians 1:21 says, For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is to gain. That was Paul saying that, in other words, suffering for Christ was a good thing. It was an enjoyable thing. Luke 17:33, so whoever tries to keep their life will lose it. Whoever loses their life for me will find it. That's the whole secret of coming to Christ and knowing him. That's the old seed of greatness. So we got some great little clips here today. We've got Bart Miller, who's with Mercy Me. You know, they wrote the song, I Can Only Imagine, Triple Struggles. You may have seen the movie, fabulous movie about the true story of his dad beating him as a kid. Daddy Weave is another story of a guy who's a big singer. He's almost 250 pounds or whatever, but he's a huge guy. But anyway, his story of struggling to lose weight, but how God led him to write this song. The seeds of greatness are in us. We just had to let them need to mature and to grow through us. So let's get started here with Bart Miller of Mercy Me on stage sharing some of his story. This is during a concert, you know, so the quality's not quite as good as you would want to have, but it's somebody in the audience, I think, taped this for us and actually videoed it. So we extracted the audio, obviously. So listen to Bart Miller with Mercy Me.
When I was a kid, man, I never heard that. My parents divorced when I was three, and my mom remarried a couple of times. And by the time I was in third grade, my stepdad was transferred, and so my mom had to move away, and they decided to keep my brother and myself, he's 5 years older than me, with around the rest of our family in the same schools in the same town. And so we lived with my dad from about third grade on. Now, what a lot of people didn't realize at the time is that my dad was incredibly abusive to only me. He had a really, really bad temper, and whenever he had a bad day, he would take it out on me pretty severely. I don't recall many weeks where I wasn't beaten 3, 4, 5 times a week. I remember one night, the first time I ever saw my dad cry, actually, was he beat me so badly that I had to sleep on my stomach because from the back of my neck to the back of my knees was black and blue all the way down. And I had to be 7 or 8 years old. And he came in and said, why are you crying? And he threw the lights on and he just started, saw what he had done and started bawling. And this went on until about sixth grade. And in sixth grade, I went through a growth spurt, so I guess I became a little too big to handle. And so he never laid a finger on me, but he tore me apart emotionally, you know, pretty badly. Sometimes it was worse than being beat. And this went on until about my freshman year in high school. In my freshman year in high school, my father was diagnosed with cancer. This was bittersweet for me because part of me was glad because I thought all this would come to an end. The other part of me was devastated because it was my dad. It's all that I knew. And what I didn't realize at the time was I had been given like this front row seat to see the gospel transform someone in ways that I've never seen before and rarely seen since, it feels like. And my dad went from being this monster to being this man who was desperately and passionately in love with Jesus. And I don't say that lightly because, quite honestly, I didn't want grace to be for him. I didn't want him to get away with this, get out of it scot-free. But the change was undeniable. We never prayed growing up, not at dinner, not at Easter or Christmas. It just didn't happen in our house. And then all of a sudden, I would hear him each night in his room through my walls, hearing him praying for my brother and myself and my mom, who divorced me, three, just crying over us. I was like, who is this guy? We owned a big family Bible. That's the one I thought we had. Apparently, he had more. And my dad kind of withered away because of the cancer over the years. And there'd be nights where I'd find him and he'd be asleep with his face in the Word. And I would go in and put it on his nightstand and he would wake up. And we'd start having these conversations just about stuff for hours. And there was always a moment in every conversation where he'd be in tears and just saying, I'm so sorry for everything that I've done to you. And I wish I could fix it. And looking back, man, every time we had those conversations, I believe that just a part of me was being repaired, just hearing him say that. He passed away when I was a freshman in college. And so in those 4 or 5 years, he went from being this man that I was afraid I was going to be like one day. I was afraid I was going to be that kind of husband and that kind of dad. By the time he passed away, he was the guy that I wanted to be when I grew up, if I ever grow up. And he's still one of the godliest men I've ever known. And And you know, he wasn't a guy that got up and slapped his Bible around and told you you're going to turn or burn and wore the t-shirt stuff. He really wasn't that guy. A lot of people wouldn't know much about the change, but it was what happened behind closed doors. I saw this man just obsessed with the Word. I saw everything about him just change and transform. So much so that by the time he passed away, the gospel had just, started like this war path in my heart for the gospel, because I realized, man, if the gospel can change that dude, change anybody. And I still believe that to this day. And needless to say that, you know, I grew up and I married my wife, Shannon, who was my first girlfriend in seventh grade. And so she knew my dad. We didn't date that whole time. She came to her senses in college, but we were still friends that whole time. And so she kind of knew the transformation that took place. And you know, it's a sweet story and tragic at the same time. But needless to say, when we got married, I had some baggage, to say the least. Like, if we went through any stressful situations, man, I didn't know how to handle it, man. I would either take it that it was my fault and just kind of shut down, or get the fetal position and go to happy place. And she was like, you know what? We need to figure this out. Maybe we should go to counseling. And I was like, yeah, like, whatever you think. So we went and saw this godly woman that not only saved our marriage, it's like she saved my life. And one of the first things, I remember going in, and the first thing she said to me was, we need to go back to your childhood. I was like, no, I'm here because I had a bad Tuesday. I don't want to talk about all that. She goes, well, it's kind of connected. So for about 2 years, we kind of realized how connected it actually was. And there was this moment to where this kind of, I guess you'd call it a breakthrough moment for me. She said this one thing that got me just crying, like that kind of Goodwill Hunting ugly cry where there's snot flying everywhere and it's just running away or something, you know, that kind of thing. And really, it was profound to me. It may not be to you, but all she said was, you know, if you've ever wondered what you would have been like in a godly family environment, just watch your middle son, Charlie, because he's just like, I started bawling. I'm not even sure why I was crying, but I was bawling. Maybe because in a weird way, it was kind of this do-over. That I got to play the role of the dad and try to get some of it right. Maybe it's because she just accused us of being a godly family environment. I was like, we win, let's go, pay the woman. But whatever it was, I know that Charlie he's kind of freaked out because I stare at him a little too much now. Overanalyze everything he does. I'm like, why are you picking Cheerios over Fruit Loops? Is that where I went wrong? And so it got me wondering, man, if I could ever sit down and have a conversation with the 8-year-old, 9-year-old version of me, what would that look like? With everything that you've gone through in your life, if you could have a conversation with that younger version of you, what would you possibly say? The blessing and the curse of being a songwriter is, and my therapy is that I write songs about it, so I thought it'd be a cool idea for a song, not realizing it was going to be one of the hardest songs ever written. Not to mention it had to be about 3 minutes long and rhyme, so like doubly as hard, right? So I didn't know what to say. I didn't know where to start. So I was driving my car one night, and it just kind of dawned on me, I know what I would say. You see, I mentioned that friend that kind of reminded me there's nothing I can do to make Christ love me any more than he already does. Well, one of the other things he did that literally probably made the biggest impact is, for about 2 years, he would text me on a regular basis, you are holy, righteous, and redeemed, and I am for you. And you know what? I started to believe it. Not only who I was in Christ, but that somebody was actually for me. But I met a guy that could look me in the eyes, and regardless of the things that I've done, right or wrong, he saw me as a brother in Christ, and not the guy that screwed up. He could still see that what the things that I've done was not my identity. I'd never seen anything like it. And so if I could sit with the 9-year-old version, 8-year-old version of me, I know exactly what I would say. I would just tell him he's holy, righteous, and redeemed over and over and over and over again. Because if that turned my world upside down at 40, how much damage could I have done if I understood it at 8? I don't know what any of you are going through personally. I don't have to know. I don't know the things that you've done or that have been done to you, but I can tell you with all of my heart, with everything that I have, I believe 100% that Christ is bigger.
What a story. Bart Millard again wrote the song I Can Only Imagine, really about his dad passing away of cancer finally, you know, beaten as a kid. You know, you heard the story, but his dad really came to Christ and became a very humble, loving man in the last years of his life. And of course, the song is I Can Only Imagine What It's Like to Be with Christ in Heaven. And will I dance for you, Lord? You know, I'm gonna do tumbling for him. I am so, I can't tumble worth a darn right now, but when I get there, I'm gonna be able to do it because, you know, all things are good in heaven, and I'll be able to do that more effectively, I think. But that's that song and that video of Bart singing, I Can Only Imagine. There's 35 million views on YouTube of that song. That's the leading song. And I, of course, every time I've heard it, it just puts chills into me, you know, thinking about it, imagining what it's going to be like to be in heaven. It'll be a fun time. It's going to be good. You can see some friends, you know, and parents and all that good stuff. Okay, here is another guy that has really hit it very strong. We're talking about seeds of greatness today. What is it about? It's about dying to self. You know, a seed dies in soil. In other words, it's not meant to just sit around. It has to germinate. It has to multiply. It has to grow. And that's what God intends for us to do. So we give up our selfish will for his will to be done. That's what he wanted from Adam and Eve in the first place. But he gave them free will because they sinned. So now he's giving us a chance to have a relationship with them through a loving encounter. And that is to be serving him, and he serves us and works through us. Big Daddy Weave, he struggled. A lot of weight. You know, this guy's an incredible singer, great band. Listen to his story about struggling with weight and how God inspired him to write the song called Redeem, which has had 35 million people watch this one, too. Listen in.
So, you know, you get married, that changes a lot of things. And then the next set of blessing came along. We all became daddies of little kids, you know. Whew, and that changes your entire perspective. Amen. I remember when our second little boy was born. I mean, I've been a fat dude for as long as I can remember. You know what I mean? If you are, you know, the fat kid in school and you hang in there, you will be the fat dude in your neighborhood. That's just how it works. And we have a good time with it because, I mean, there's the whole Big Daddy thing. And if you're my size in the South, you are Big Daddy, you know. And it goes like that or whatever. But it also represents, man, a lot of hurt in my life and a lot of pain. And I remember looking at Zeke. He is our second little boy born. I remember standing there with him, looking at him, brand new baby in the hospital, new life. I just said, God, I want to be around to see him graduate high school, and I need to do something, Jesus, you know. And so my wife and I, we watched this show called The Biggest Loser. Have you ever seen this? Yes. Just to clarify, I was never on that show, you know. Mainly because they make the big people like take their clothes off on national television. That is wrong, y'all. I mean, call your congressperson, you know what I'm saying? It's like, we got to put an end to this televised obese nudity. There's some things you just can't unsee once you saw it, you know? I'm blind! You know, it's like, gosh. Whew. So we had our own ideas as we did. We wanted to keep it more private than that, you know? And it was the beginning of 2009. We decided to have, like, our own household Biggest Loser, you know? And so the goal was for me in 2009 was to lose 90 pounds. So we called it 90 and 09. We thought that was real clever, right? And so, man, we got down to it, and I was losing all kinds of weight. I was meeting with professionals, and halfway through the year, I was down 50 pounds. I kept on at it. We're meeting with, you know, all kinds of trainers and stuff like that. And, you know, by November, I was down 70 pounds. By December, I was down 80 pounds. And by this time, other people had started hearing about this challenge that I was, you know, about. And so they just were cheering me on. I mean, you know, tens of thousands of people on our website are like signing up. I'm going to do it too and all this stuff. You're an inspiration and all these things. You know, and so, man, the pressure was on at that point. Because then at the beginning of December, I had, you know, 1 month to lose 10 more pounds, right? And so for me at that point, it wasn't even about, you know, the health reason anymore. It was really just about this number. And I was so terrified of letting everybody down. Because in my heart, there had always been this fear of what other people think, you know? This difficulty to accept myself. And so the last day of December 2009 came. I got on the scale and I had lost 84 pounds, which is nothing to sneeze at, you know what I mean? Well, don't go to cheering just yet, because this is where the story takes a tragic turn. What can be lost can also be found, you know what I'm saying? And this really was the tragic part of it, because when I got on there, and 84 pounds is like losing a middle schooler off your body, you know? But when I saw that I'd missed the goal by 6 pounds, I was destroyed. Because I felt like, and this is not about a pity party for Mike here, you know, even though I threw myself one at that time. Because it resonated with this peace in me, you know? Even though I saw this good thing, I couldn't see the good in it. I just saw failure, and that resonated with something that had, I feel like I had always sort of put that stamp on my life. My mama and daddy never did. I never had anybody I could physically say spoke that over me. I just always had a hard time loving myself, and I don't feel like we ever addressed that in church, you know? And so, man, I started putting weight back on again because I was depressed and I felt like a failure. And as I put weight back on, it just increased this hatred of myself. And there was a day when I hated myself as bad as I can remember. And I was sitting in our garage in Tennessee. I remember the concrete and the way it felt on my leg, man. Sitting there, I was telling Jesus everything I hated about myself, you know? I was telling him all about it. God, you're perfect and you love me just the way I am. I know that. I've never doubted that. Why can't I love me, God? I mean, it was like Jesus came in my garage. And he didn't speak with the voice like in the Ten Commandments, you know, Moses. He didn't say anything like that. But when the Holy Spirit begins to speak to your heart, then you know he's talking to you. Amen? And that day, it was like he said, Mike, you need to let me tell you what I think about you for once. And out of everything that the creator of the entire universe could have said, he said, I like the way you smile. And he said, I love your heart for people. He began to just fill my heart up with stuff that he likes about me. He said, you know why? Because you're mine. And you're mine not based on, you know, your perfect track record, your ability to get it right. You're mine solely because of the blood of Jesus. And you need to see yourself the way that I see you, as my son. That was the beginning of something new in my life. Because I'm not in any way little daddy weave, you know? But when I look in the mirror, I don't hate myself anymore, because I am learning that real humility is just walking, realizing our need for God and just agreeing with whatever he says about anything. And tonight, what he says over every life in here, everyone who will turn to him, is that we are redeemed by the blood of Jesus. This song came from that place. And I just pray that even in this place tonight, we can sing this and believe this, because that's what God says about us. It seems like all I could see was the struggle. Be
chains, wipe away every stain. I'm not who I used to be, because I don't have to be. The old man inside of me is his name long dead and gone, because I've got a new name, a new life. I'm not the same, and I hope that we'll carry me home. I am redeemed. You set me free. So I'll shake off these heavy chains, wipe away every stain. I'm not who I used to be. I am redeemed. You set me free. So I'll shake off these heavy chains, wipe away every stain. We thank you for our identity in you because of the blood of Jesus. Thank God, redeemed. God bless you guys. James.
Again, this Big Daddy Weave, redeemed. What a great song. That song is nip and tuck with, I can only imagine, is the most watched song on YouTube. At least in a Christian venue, I haven't checked out all the other rap stuff. You know, I don't do that stuff. Sorry about that. If you're listening for that, sorry, you got the wrong station, the wrong show. But we're talking about what Christ has got to do with life and the seeds of greatness. You got to, the seed has to fall and it has to die in soil. We give up ourselves so that God will grow us and use us to the fruitfulness that he plans for us. It's beyond just living and existing and eating, you know, three meals a day and having a nice bed and all that other kind of stuff, or a job that pays so many dollars. You know, that's just part of life. You got to deal with some of that, but God has a deeper calling and a purpose of love, peace, and joy. It's a spiritual journey. We got a body, soul, and a spirit. We got to feed all three. The soul is the mind, the intellect, person, and will, and emotion, but the spirit is of God. God has a spirit in you. But you got to surrender, die to self. That's what the seed is, to die, to grow. Okay, that's Holly Starr. I got to see through my father's eyes. I love this song. And we'll be back in a moment. Got to take a break here.
I needed explanations for expectations I could never reach. I know I'm not the only one who's ever cried for help. And Jesus did for me what I could not do myself.
Traffic slowing down because of an accident near downtown on I-95 southbound at the exit at 8th Street. That's blocking the left lane. Also, there could be some roadway debris on I-10 eastbound at the exit at McDuff. And heading off the Buckman Bridge, a disabled vehicle on the West Beltway 295 northbound at the exit at US 17 Roosevelt Boulevard. A slight chance of a shower, maybe a thunderstorm through tonight, low 74. Thursday, partly sunny, high 89.
Thank you for listening to WTRJ The Truth and the inspiring and informative programs we feature. We partner with ministries in this community, nationally, and even globally, to bring you the programs you hear. The program content is produced by these ministry partners and does not necessarily reflect the positions or views of other ministry partners, WTRJ The Truth owners, management, or employees in every instance. We trust that you're blessed by the programs you hear. And thanks for listening to WTRJ The Truth.
So many days I listened to the voice inside my head. I never thought that I'd be someone who could be misled.
I wanted the mirror to show me something I could not see. I needed explanations for expectations I could never reach. I know I'm not the only one who's ever cried for help, and Jesus did for me what I could not.
Welcome back. This is John Bean here. Listen to Inspiration 316. Thanks for joining us. Hey, we're talking about the good news of Jesus Christ, everyday miracles. Hey, seeds of greatness is the theme of today's show. And we've been played earlier, Bart Millard, again, the writer of the song. I can only imagine the movie was done by him about his dad and the situation there. But dad actually died of cancer, but it became a really inspiring story to him. Big Daddy Weave about losing weight and the song that he wrote called Redeemed. Again, we're sponsored today by Wise Counsel. We got the boot camp coming up Thursday, and it's not too late, I don't think, for you to register and make it there. We start at 9, and we're going to go till 3:30. Even if you don't make it the whole day, you're going to be inspired by Judith McNutt from Christian Healing Ministry, Jeff Rutt from Hope International, 19 countries, Christ-centered microfinance, and then Rivers Pierce, one of the top internet experts in America, and then Phil Driscoll, the best trumpet player that's ever lived, in my estimation. And what a Christ-centered story he has to share, too. What inspiring time it will be networking with 100 people. And I can't wait to have it happen and even have it be done. My wife says, yeah, you're going to be happy when it's over, right? Yes, I am. But I love doing this thing. We do it every year. So today we're talking about seeds of greatness. Seeing through your father's eyes, God has a purpose and a plan for you to be born, conceived as a seed, and in your mother's womb, grow and mature, and that's part of the plan for all of us. Okay, but what happens is that we have to then take on responsibilities as we become adult-like, okay, to be followers of Christ. Here's Bennett Brown, who's built 5 different banks. Incredible story of a godly Christian man and his struggle during the downturn in 2008, 9, 10, whatever years it was, and how his bank had his question of survival. Listen to this incredible story. What a testimony.
In 2008, we had a collapse of our economy, and the banking industry, really a meltdown around the world. The federal government made a decision that the big banks would be bailed out with TARP, and that the small banks were dispensable. And they basically said, you can go under. You're not important. We're not going to give you any capital. So they also changed the capital rule from 5% capital to 8% capital in 2008. Well, in the middle of a recession, it's very difficult to raise money and get people to invest in you. So our board was given a challenge to raise $4 million. After 9 months with a New York broker, he came up with zero. And so our board said, basically, it's over. We're not going to put any more money in. We've got a lot of our money in it. It's too late. I'm fortunate to work with a really strong group of Christian leaders that are in the bank. There are 7 of us, actually 8 of us in our senior management team. And we started praying. And this was already in late September 2009. Almost every day in the paper, there was an announcement of another bank failing. In Jacksonville, there were 17 community banks headquartered here in 2006, and there are three of them left out of 17. So that's how. In the state of Florida, 100 banks are gone since 2006 out of 300. So 1/3 of the banks in the state that were community banks. But our senior management team prayed, and we decided we would try to match the TARP. And I'm going to shorten it as much as I can, but we were able to get approval from the Fed in a record time, a miracle in itself. Most banks have been waiting 6 months for approval to borrow. In our case, we're a holding company, and so a debenture is a borrowing. We were able to get our approval through a man in less than 2 weeks. We had the offering circular. We mailed it out to everybody we know, and if you probably got it, because if you're on, if if you had a business, we knew you, we mailed it. The first one was at Ponte Vedra, Jimbo's stomping ground. We were at Ponte Vedra Club to do our PowerPoint. The day before, we had zero people signed up, so we canceled it and said, that's not a very good start. This is already into November, and we had to have it before year end, and so we only had three presentations total. We canceled Ponte Vedra. The next one was in Epping Forest, and we had 14 people respond, and out of the 14, on the day of the showing, there was a really bad storm midday, and three people were there. One was our CPA, one was our insurance agent. Neither one planned to buy anything. They were being nice to show. And one was a 70s, old customer, and he had his glasses held together with a paper clip and a rubber band. And he asked no questions. We actually debated whether we do the presentation, and we said, yes, we need practice. Let's do it. So there were four of us involved. We did it. And then he asked no questions. He ate his meal. Everybody got up and left. The next morning, early, we had a prayer meeting in a conference room at the bank with the senior management team. And you'll read all throughout the New Testament and the Old Testament how involved with prayer is crying out. You pray, but if you look at the Bible, they don't just say they prayed. Whether it's David or Moses or Jesus, they cried out. Well, we were doing some crying out to the Lord that morning for about an hour, and I came downstairs, and Richard Martin, a lot of y'all probably know Richard Martin, he was with American Bank for a long time, and he is a dear friend. He's an officer at our bank, and he's also a director. Was supposed to be deer hunting in Georgia. And he was in my office, and he said, you know, the guy that was at the meeting yesterday called me and said, you want me to put, I'm thinking about buying a little bit of the stock, I'm going to put a check in the mail, or would you pick it up? He said, well, I'm going by the bank on the way to Georgia for deer hunting. I'll be glad to pick it up. So it was a sealed envelope. So he handed me the envelope, and I'm telling you this because a lot of times we hear people talk about miracles, and in my life, God only does a miracle when you know for sure you have nothing else to do with it. It's you've done everything you can do, and it's just God. So he hands me the check, envelope. I open the envelope, and in it is a check for $1 million. And he says, this gentleman said, Bennett, I've really been led to buy this stock, and if you have any left over and you need me to buy more, I'll buy whatever you want me to buy. The next day, we had no checks in, and we'd been doing this for almost 3 weeks. The next day, checks started just coming in. It was like God just, I'm going to show you, and then I'm going to. Our last presentation, 35 people showed up at the River Club. We oversubscribed 50% when we raised $6
million. Wow.
We thought we needed $4 million, but we didn't know the recession had another 3 years to go, and we needed $6 million. God knew we needed $6 million, and he provided it. And I've said this a couple of times. I have friends who say, yeah, Bennett, you've got a great banking group. You've got a great team. And, you've got a lot of experience, so that's why you did it. Let me just make sure you know that everybody on my team and everybody that works at my bank, and I know I had nothing to do with it and they had nothing to do with it. God, through his love and mercy, provided at a time when nobody was buying bank stock. In fact, our board brought four brokers in and asked them if they would represent us to sell, and they all four walked away and said, nobody's buying bank stock, you couldn't give it away. So I know God honored our prayers and is faithful.
That is an amazing story, isn't it, Bennett Brown? True story. Obviously, the bank not only survived, it eventually got sold to Fidelity Bank out of Atlanta, and the stockholders all got their money back. Some made good money, good return on investment. Others didn't, but no one lost the money because that was a pivotal time in our economy. Banks were failing at a rapid rate. This was a community bank, too, at the time. Here's an amazing story. Seeds of greatness we're talking about today. Chris Lawrence had seeds of greatness in him. He just didn't know it. He thought he was trash. He was down about himself, down about his family, and doing all kinds of crazy things. Listen to his wild story, wanting to commit suicide. Listen in.
In 1977, I was in my late 20s. I smoked pot every day I could afford it. I drank from as early as I could get away from my office to the time I went home for dinner so that I could pick a fight at dinner so that I could go back out and close down the bars. And I learned how to beg, borrow, and steal drinks and run up tabs all over Jacksonville, the beach. I was intimately acquainted with every topless bar and pornographic theater in Jacksonville. I had begged, borrowed, and stolen all the money that it took to try and support those vices and owed enough money to hospitals with a little sick girl and a mentally ill wife. As a result of a lot of things, mostly me, that we had city council attorneys and other legal apparatuses lined up against us to get anything we had, which wasn't really anything but one beat up 7-year-old Volkswagen. There was no hope in my life. I had a wife who was miserable and depressed all the time. We tried to get divorced more times than you can count. The one time we were just about to seriously do it, she got pregnant and had my little girl Shannon, and I decided to try and be a good daddy for a while, and that didn't work. So in 1977, February, I committed myself to take the one good thing I had left, the 71 Volkswagen, and my life insurance, and go into town. I had $5 in my pocket. I was going to spend it in the Behind the Green Door Pornographic Theater down there in the middle of town. Drive back up onto the Hart Bridge, and on the downhill run, get going fast enough, I could run the car into the side and either go over the side or hit it hard enough, I'd bounce around and be killed, because my $100,000 insurance would pay double if I died accidentally. And I figured $200,000 and me gone was the answer to every problem I had and the answer to every problem my family had. So I headed over the bridge. I headed over the bridge that way, but over the bridge that way, God had arranged it that I had gotten a little bit of life. I'd gotten a little injection of medicine the night before. I was a member of the Episcopal Church and the head of the youth group with all those problems. That was a ducky situation. I was a director of the Rotary Club, all kinds of good things in the community. And I was taking a course at the Episcopal Church that caused me to read the parable of the prodigal son the night before this day in February. How there was a father who loved his son no matter what he'd done, and when the son came to himself and decided to turn around and go back, of course the father ran out to meet him. Well, none of that entered up here. That didn't affect my deciding to commit suicide one bit, so far as I knew, but at the top of the Hart Bridge, I very unscripturally cried out, God, I've messed up my life so bad I can't even fix it anymore. If you can do anything with it, you can have it. If you can't, I'm going to end it. And I was pretty sure there was God somewhere, and I didn't have any trouble believing that Jesus, like George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, had existed and even hung on a cross and things had happened. But for me, I'd gone through so many motions and nothing had worked. So I made that one cry, pulled down, parked by a parking lot a block away from the pornographic theater, because as director of the Rotary Club and head of the Episcopal Youth Group, I never want anybody to see me parked in front of those places for hours at a time. And as I started to creep across the parking lot, about 14 steps into it, God came upon me, surrounded me with sound and with light. As I've tried to describe it for 7 years. It was sound and it was light, and it was big and it was frightening, and I tried to take a step forward and I couldn't take another step, and I tried to move my hands forward and I couldn't move any further in the direction that I was headed. And I thought, well, all those years of LSD and drugs, and now you're suicidal, you've obviously, you know, you're mental and you're just having some kind of seizure. But I turned around to go back to the car, since that didn't work, and I could do that very easily. I could just walk, and all that noise was still all around me, so I turned around again to go back into the Behind the Green Door, and right where I turned the second time, there it was. I couldn't do it. I couldn't get in that place. And I was terrified, and I went back into my car, a little 71 Volkswagen square back, and I closed the door, and all the sounds of the world shut out, and then all of a sudden, all the vision of the world shut out. I couldn't see the buildings in front of me. I couldn't see the trees and the traffic around me. There was this enormous rushing and this bright light, brighter than looking at the sun, but it didn't hurt. And in that rushing noise, that light started to come into me, and I started to cry out or ask out or think out or whatever, who are you? What's going on? And out of all of that came the answer, just as clear and pure as you hear my voice. I am. love you and I forgive you.
Praise Jesus.
And those words went deep down to everything I'd done from the time I was 14 years old and started to screw up my life to that day when I had gone to end it. Over and over again, washed in the love of God for almost 40 minutes. I am, and I love you, and I forgive you. And all the hatred and the bitterness and the filth, I could feel it getting washed away from me. I didn't know, you know, I'd never read any testimonies. I'd never been to a Baptist church or Pentecostal church. I just knew from my church teaching when to kneel down and when to stand up. And you read a lot of things that sounded good, and you knew they'd been reading them for hundreds of years, so they must have been all right. But I had never had a personal encounter with God where he came into my life. And he did that day. And there were no words for what I could do.
How about that as a story? Is that amazing or not? Amazing, amazing, amazing. Chris Lawrence, good friend of mine. You know, that was back in the Full Gospel Business men's days. And wow, what a testimony. That knock you off your chair. I am. God came into that car. I am. And I love you. And I forgive you. Wow. Is that powerful? I mean, I can just picture that happening. I mean, I had some encounters with God. Not quite that dramatic, but had some similarities to it, but, you know, God is so forgiving. Seeds of greatness, we've all got it in us. We have to die to self and let God use us and do his will instead of our own will, instead of chasing success, money, fame, power, notoriety, all that kind of stuff. We have to change his purpose and plan. Here's the day I accepted Jesus Christ by Drew Brees, the NFL quarterback. This guy's probably the overall of the last 10, 15 years, the best quarterback in the NFL. Not that the others haven't been. Everybody talked about Tom Brady and others. But this guy has been very reliable, dependable, carrying this team on his back all these years with the New Orleans Saints. Listen to Drew Brees' story here.
I felt like I was a kid who was raised well, had respect for others, tried to always do the right things, was a good student. And yet, you know, my life did revolve around sports, you know, all the way up into high school. You know, I played as many sports as I could for as long as I could. And I remember a moment, my junior year of high school, I played for Westlake High School. We were one of the top 5A schools in the state of Texas on our way to winning a state championship. I was the quarterback for the football team. And I remember I came up after a play with a torn ACL and MCL, which at the time was a devastating injury. You know, I thought that, you know, my career was over. I thought, you know, I'd see many of my friends go through that same injury and never come back the same. And I thought, you know, that's going to be me now. And kind of this attitude of feeling sorry for myself and, you know, what I have to live for now. You know, my life has revolved completely around, you know, sports. And that's really how I formed my identity up to that point. Here I am 5 weeks later after that. Again, it was my junior year of high school, right around my 17th birthday. And I remember I was sitting in church, First Baptist Church in Austin, Texas. My parents were divorced at the time. They got divorced when I was 7 years old. I went to church every other weekend with my father. In my mother's house, we didn't go to church. But I was sitting there that Sunday, which up to that point, you know, I went to church because, you know, my dad was going to church and my brother and I would go to Sunday school, and I was there for the donuts and to hear the cool stories. And, you know, we'd sit in the main church and my brother and I would just kind of mess around the whole time and not really pay attention. But for some reason, this Sunday was different. Again, for 5 weeks, I'd been on crutches, feeling sorry for myself. Sports had been up my identity. And I was sitting there asking myself, is this really what life is all about? And at that moment, I'm sitting there listening to our pastor speak about God looking for a few good men to lead. And at that moment, Jesus reached in and grabbed my heart and made me feel like, you know what, I'm one of those few good men. And my life was transformed after that. A very calming influence came over to me. And I knew that God had a plan for me. And whether it involved sports or not, it didn't matter, because I was being called to live my life for him. And that gave me great peace. From then on, I knew that, you know, I was going to trust in God's plan. One of my favorite verses, 2 Corinthians 5:7, I'll be led by faith and not by sight. I think at the time, and for most people, you were such visual people. We want to be able to see, we want to be able to predict, we want to be able to, you know, feel like we're in control of our lives and we're the ones making the decisions. And yet, Proverbs 16:9 will tell you that your heart will make plans, but the Lord will direct your steps. I think God has given us all great talents, abilities, strengths to go a certain direction, and yet our point A to B is not God's point A to B. He wants us to get there, but he's probably just going to lead us on a little bit different path to get there. And that path is going to be presented with great opportunities and also great challenges. But those are there in our life to mold us, strengthen us, and shape us into who God meant for us to be. And I think now with Jesus in my life, in my heart, I know that no matter what happens, it's all part of God's plan. And it gives me great confidence. It also gives me great certainty to know that I know where the end point is with Jesus. And I know that the path and the journey there is there to strengthen me and make me stronger.
Wow, is that amazing? Drew Brees, again, NFL quarterback with the New Orleans Saints, and what a testimony. Really knowing about Christ and walking with Christ, trusting Christ. Didn't sound like a quarterback at all, did it? Didn't talk about football very much. I mean, you may refer to it a little bit, but the idea is about what Christ wants done. If God says, hey, it's time to retire, it's time for you to go in ministry, it's time to get out, the seeds of greatness are going to multiply through him. He's going to reach so many people because of his notoriety and because of his success and because of the respect that people have for the guy. He has been incredibly respectful. Now he has kids. I don't know. I remember seeing them first conceived in the early years, but they're probably 7, 8, or 9 years old by now. God has a purpose for all of us. The seeds of greatness are in you just like they are in me. Here's David Levy, who's a doctor from San Diego. He was here in Jacksonville a couple of years ago, and we had a chance to interview him. This is not that interview, but he actually was supported by Charlie Towers in his book. I'm trying to think of the name of his book. I should have Gray Matter. That's the name of the book. Anybody, medical doctor talking about the man is made in God's image, that you are beautiful. Listen to this short clip.
Because we're made in the image of God, his words are powerful, and so are yours. I don't know that we truly understand what it is to be made in his image. And when we speak blessing over people and over ourselves, I mean, I get up in the morning, I look, before I comb my hair, I look myself in the mirror and I say, you are beautiful. You are beloved. You are delightful. That's straight out of the Song of Solomon. If you, and I say that, I was speaking in Texas, and all the girls said, you can't say that. I said, if you can't say that when you look your worst, then you are believing what the world is saying about you. We will tell you when you're beautiful. We will tell you how to look. We'll tell you what we think of you. And then once we say it, you have to accept our valuation of you. To bless yourself first thing in the morning, you are beautiful. You know, some days I don't feel it. Saying things you don't feel is actually quite powerful. That's the power of declaration. That's why we sing, and we're going to be learning more from John Ashcroft. That's why we sing, because there are things that happen in the brain when we sing that exercises, cultivates, nurtures our faith. And the same thing with declarations. We can use those, and I use them in the morning. And I will sing, and I will bless myself. And sometimes I need to read the Psalms until I believe what I'm reading. So you've got to sometimes, you know, blow on the fire to get it going, because we don't always feel it. And we are such feeling-oriented people. We need to, first of all, understand ourselves, understand that we do have some highs and some lows, and have a plan when you get into a low, how you're going to get yourself out of it. Singing is an excellent way. There was a period in my life I would do some dancing. I would never do it in public, but I found that a physical expression with all of your body praising the Lord, and it says, you know, I mean, my name is David, right? I have good authority to dance, and I've stopped that this last season of life. But there was a time when I could pull myself out of any depression by doing some what I would call worship dancing, something that you know, I don't know where I got it, but something that was, I felt honoring to God and expressed my love for him that moved my body. And no matter how I felt, if I would do that, sort of move in the opposite spirit against what you're feeling, against the negativity, you can overcome that with God's grace.
All right. Thank you. Maybe you know this about Dr. David Levy, but he came back, I think you spent, was it September? The month of September, on one of the Hope ships in Africa. And that is an extremely unselfish but powerful thing to do with, I believe, eternal consequences. Don't you? I really think there are eternal consequences. And day to day, it's probably humdrum and difficult and very hard work, but, and you can't see all of the results.
I just want to do something right here. I just feel like we need to, everyone needs to say, I am beautiful. I want to hear you say that. I am beautiful. Let's say it again. I am beautiful. I bless my complexion. My DNA. I thank God for the way he made me.
Again, that is David Levy, a medical doctor from San Diego, talking about, I am beautiful. I am, I don't always say that. I don't say that ever. But I can think about it. The point is, in God's eyes, you are beautiful. In God's eyes, you are blessed. He loves you. He cares about you. He's concerned about you. He's in the midst of you. He's never left you and never forsaken you. This is what God does. We just have to open our head and our heart and soul to knowing it, walking with it. Seeds of greatness, you've got them. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to the Inspiration 316 Show with John Beener. Join us each weekday at the same time. If you want to share your testimony, listen to past shows, or get a free book, visit us at our website, www.inspiration316.com.
Thank you for joining us for Inspiration 316 and John Beener. Coming up next, it's First Baptist Church of downtown Jacksonville here on listener-supported WTRJ, The Truth. Thank you for listening to WTRJ, The Truth and the inspiring and informative programs we feature. We partner with ministries in this community, nationally, and even globally to bring you the programs you hear. The program content is produced by these ministry partners and does not necessarily reflect the positions or views of other ministry partners, WTRJ The Truth owners, management, or employees in every instance. We trust that you're blessed by the programs you hear, and thanks for listening to WTRJ The Truth.
WTRJ, Orange Park, Jacksonville. WAYL, St. Augustine. WATY, Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. President Trump says he's been keeping one eye on the Senate confirmation hearings for his Supreme Court nominee, Judge Brett Kavanaugh. He says the judge has what he calls an outstanding intellect. Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office today, the president says he is happy with the way the proceedings are going. He says what he saw what he called some incredible answers to very complex questions. The Mexican man charged with killing an Iowa college student was known for years on the dairy farm where he worked by another name, John Budd. Yarrabee Farms now facing scrutiny over whether its managers had any idea that the man, whose real name is Christian Bahena Rivera, was in the country illegally before the slaying of Molly Tibbetts. U.S. stocks closed with losses as technology and consumer-focused companies declined in particular. The Dow was up 22 points, but the Nasdaq down 96. This is SRN News.